Hey guys, I am pumped to be able to share an exclusive trailer with you after the show. From Blue Wire Studios comes Golden Goal, stories of soccer legends. Each Monday, two new episodes will take a look into some of soccer's biggest stars and the moments that define their careers, all narrated by Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's Always Cheating podcast. From Zlatan to Messi to Rapinoe and many more, each episode will focus on the historical plays and personalities that make the beautiful game great. So stay tuned after the episode and check out Golden Goal, Stories of Soccer Legends, wherever you get your podcasts. All right, now, let's go Grizz.
Morant with a running start. Elevate! Oh, it dunks! Oh, my goodness! Stop it! Tie game in overtime. Gasol will turn. Into it on the floor with Randolph. Hard to tell if there are any punches being thrown under there, but Griffin took exception to something. The officials break it up quickly.
See, he just locked his arm and then kind of pulled him over. Zach falls down, and then, you know what? A little elbow there.
Oh, he's digging the elbow.
Welcome to Grits and Grinds, a Memphis Grizzlies podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. My name is Keith Parrish. It's starting to feel like the beginning of an NBA season as the NBA tries to get its year going again and complete the playoffs in some fashion. Teams are traveling. The Raptors have been in Florida for 10 days already. I guess teams are not actively traveling besides the Raptors, but in the next coming days, I believe on Tuesday, July 7th, teams start moving. We still have lots of teams that have had to shut down their practice facilities because of positive tests among the traveling party. This was sort of expected, but not great. Again, the NBA is trying to get the test all out of the way before everyone gets to Orlando. The MLS right now is in Orlando and actually on Disney World, trying to do the same thing the NBA is going to be doing. And it's going very poorly for MLS. They're having lots of positive tests, and I don't know if they're doing a great job of separating and isolating each other. And I don't know. Well, I guess that's not for me to say. I don't have the information, but I do know that Nashville FC, they had numerous positive COVID tests and are supposed to play their first match on Wednesday, July 8th, and that probably is not going to happen. So the NBA is trying to do this, and right now the Pelicans have signed Sendarius Thornwell to replace someone because you're allowed to sign a replacement player. And so they're replacing someone who apparently has tested positive for COVID-19, but we don't know who that is. So it's a mess. That's about it. That's all I can say. It's a mess. The Grizzlies and the NBA have announced their preseason games or their scrimmages, their warm-up scrimmages, basically preseason games. On Friday, July 24th, the Grizzlies will play a scrimmage against the 76ers. They tried to match up teams that probably won't play in the playoffs. So Sixers fit that bill. Then on Sunday, July 26th at 7 p.m., they play the Rockets. And then big game, circle your calendars, Tuesday, July 28th, a scrimmage, a meaningless scrimmage against the dreaded Miami Heat and Andre Iguodala. We finally get that grudge match. Dylan Brooks versus Andre Iguodala. We've been waiting for it. We didn't think we were going to get it. But somewhere on the campus of Disney World, the Memphis Grizzlies and Miami Heat are going to scrimmage at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, July 28th. So that's on the schedule, along with the announcement of these scrimmages. The Grizzlies and other teams are also doing media availability, and it's basically like media day in the preseason and in training camp. I haven't heard a single thing that matters that's been said by anyone. It's all the hysterical platitudes of who's gained the most weight and how Brandon Clark is improving his floater and people are adding to their games. Ja Morant has said he gained 12 pounds of muscle. He said his knee is finally healed from his previous offseason's knee surgery, so he should be even better. All this is just your normal, everyone's talking up a good game, and it's all meaningless. Taylor Jenkins was talking about Justice Winslow's versatility to play 1 through 4. He doesn't want to put a number on what position he plays. Mainly, it's he's versatile with the ball. It's just all that stuff that doesn't really mean anything. If something significant has been said and I've missed it, please let me know. But it's all platitudes as far as I've seen. Mainly, people look a little bit different. Brandon Clark got a haircut. He got his hair braided, a little longer and braided now. It's no longer the kid and play kind of sort of high top thing he had going on. Jonas Valanciunas shaved his head. Not sure I love the look. That's about it. Just the change of appearance and then some interesting platitudes. Fun fact I found out. Not really that fun of a fact. I was looking at some hustle stats and I found out that Brandon Clark has not taken a charge all year. Why do I bring that up now? I don't know. I just found it out. I wanted to tell someone. So Brandon Clark, whose offense is weirdly ahead of his defense, even though he slid in the draft because he was a little bit older and people thought he didn't have any offensive game, he's apparently elite at offense, and that unbelievable true shooting percentage, the great touch on the floater, hitting his three-pointers. His defense has been a little slower to come around. He's a fine defensive player, but he's not really performing at an elite level like we thought. And again, I'm not disappointed. He's been awesome. Just saying, some people thought he might become some kind of all-defense type player, and right now, he's not. And comically enough, he's never drawn a charge. So maybe it's because he plays the right way. Maybe that's the narrative we can go with it. Anyway, I guess the news we can take away from all these media availabilities is the team is just saying it's healthy, which is the good news. The players are all going to be available. And Taylor Jenkins and the coaching staff will then have to figure out how they all go together. I guess that's the thing to look forward to in these scrimmages. A lot of the teams already know who their best players are, already know who their starters are even. The Grizzlies are going to be one of those teams, maybe along with the Trailblazers, trying to figure some things out where they have to piece some things together. And I don't know if we'll see multiple starting lineups as they try to figure out who plays best together. I'm going to come back to that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Grizzlies themselves and how still they aren't really perceived as being much of a threat or being that good of a team. Lots of people are acknowledging the built-in advantage of the 3.5-game lead with this restart and how they'll probably end up in the play-in game. But I'm still seeing all these power rankings where the Trailblazers are ahead of the Grizzlies. Like the Magic, I can't get too upset with because the Magic beat up on the Grizzlies twice in both games that they played them. And people are still expecting the Pelicans. I was looking at how the Grizzlies have performed against the top teams in the NBA. There's 13 teams in the NBA with a winning record. There's 13 good teams in the NBA this season. Some analysts and Pelicans fans think the Pelicans are one of the good teams in the NBA. There's actually 14 good teams. You'd say the 13 teams with a winning record, you got the Lakers and the Clippers and the Nuggets and the Jazz and the Thunder and the Rockets and the Mavericks. Then in the East, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Heat, the Pacers, and the 76ers. That's basically our 13 good teams. Everyone thinks the Pelicans, when healthy, are up there in that echelon. Maybe one of the top 10 teams. And I'm not just trying to drive this Pelicans-Grizzlies rivalry, even though it's been an outstated, outspoken goal of mine for years over on Fast Break Breakfast. I don't believe the Pelicans are in that group. But anyway, looking at how the Grizzlies have done against these teams, and then I'm going to compare it to the Pelicans. So the Grizzlies are 8-20 against the 13 teams with the winning record. It's not good. It's bad. It's a winning percentage of 28.6%. So that's bad. But at the very least, we need to take some context and realize a lot of those games were early in the season, but also a lot of those games happened when either Ja Morant wasn't playing or Jaren Jackson Jr. wasn't playing. So they're 8-20 against the best teams in the NBA. But if you just count the games where Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. played, when the Grizzlies were reasonably full strength, when they had their two best players, apologies to Jonas Valanciunas for not being included. Maybe he's one of the two. I've realized I don't talk about Jonas enough, and he might be criminally underrated around the league. And if a Grizzlies podcast can't even acknowledge him, how should the national media acknowledge him? So that's my fault. But anyway, the games with Jaren and Ja playing, when they played those top 13 teams, the Grizzlies are a more respectable 7-12, which is kind of what you expect from a team on the fringes of the playoffs. Now, winning percentage is 38.6. That's against the top 13 teams. You can compare that to some other teams that are actually good. Like the 76ers are not good against the top 13 teams. The 76ers record is 12-18 against the top. They'd be the top 12 teams because they'd include themselves. But against the teams with winning records, the 76ers are 12-18. The Utah Jazz are 11-15, which is a 38% win percentage, the same as the Grizzlies have when Ja and Jaren play. You can look at the Mavericks, who are 10-16 against the other winning teams. Even the Toronto Raptors, the defending champs, 11-14 against these above 500 teams. The Thunder have crushed under 500 teams. They're 31-7 against the under 500 teams. Against the other teams that are above 500, they're just 9-17. So as Grizzlies fans, I don't think you have to be too overwhelmed if you look at this record against the over 500 teams being 8-20. Remember, hey, when Ja and Jaren play, they're 7-12, and that's on par with a lot of these other playoff teams. I mean, I'm not arguing they're as good as the top 8 teams. They are not. I don't think the Grizzlies are at all. But I do think they are still underrated, and we ignore that when Ja and Jaren play, and again, for the last 50 games of the season, this was a solid team. Let's compare them to the Pelicans right after this break from our friends, betonline.ag. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events, and there's no better place to do it than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Get in on the action for this week's big UFC fight, or check out odds on NASCAR, the NBA's return, Formula One, and the Premier League. Can't wait for your team to come back. They even have futures odds with win totals, division winners, Grizzlies championships, who's going to make the 8th seed, you name it. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. So the Pelicans, when they play the teams above 500, they're 9-27, which is worse than the Grizzlies. And obviously there's context to that. So 9-27, that's a 25% win percentage against those top 13 teams. Now, they were hurt at the beginning of the year. No Zion Williamson. Derek Favors didn't even play. They started off 2-16 against the teams with a winning record. It's pretty impressive. The Grizzlies, similarly, were horrible to start the year. The Grizzlies started 1-13 against teams with a winning record. The only win, you probably remember, against Mike Conley and the Utah Jazz. Still can't believe the Jazz didn't let Mike Conley attempt the game-winning shot and ran the play for Donovan Mitchell. Anyway, the Pelicans are 9-27 against the best teams. And also, so you note, they played a lot more of the top teams than the Grizzlies. We know this. The Pelicans' schedule was much harder. They had to play 9 more games than the Grizzlies against this top tier of teams. So they started 2-16 against these teams. Since then, a decent 7-11, which is basically the same record as the Grizzlies with John Jaren, 7-12. So, you know, Pelicans are as good as the Grizzlies. They are very similar talent base. I think when healthy, the Pelicans are probably better. But we don't know that. We've never seen the Grizzlies with Justice Winslow, and the Pelicans have been underachieving all season. So if you include just the games with Zion Williamson, well, now it gets worse. They're actually 2-7 against teams with a winning record with Zion Williamson. So that's even lower. That's 22% win percentage. Again, very small sample size. Zion's just learning the ropes. He's coming along. But I think it's funny that, like, Zion Williamson, I make the joke on Twitter all the time, he's never beaten a Western Conference team with a winning record. So again, the Pelicans are good on paper. They've never been good during the season. And that's why I think it's funny how much people have gotten carried away predicting them to win things. I like the Pelicans a lot too. I think in the preseason, everyone picked them to be their league pass darling, and I agreed. And I love every one of their players. And they could be really good, but they haven't been good yet. Much like the Trailblazers haven't been good yet this entire season. Jay Williams on ESPN said if the Blazers could make the 8 seed, they could upset the Lakers. The Blazers have been bad all year. And getting Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins back is not going to really help you guard LeBron James with Gary Trent Jr. or Carmelo. And even Zach Collins is not going to help you stop Anthony Davis, I don't think. But anyway, I've faded the Trailblazers enough on here. Anyway, let's wrap up this little brief episode the way I have been, which is talking about the rotations. If this bores you, I can't tell. I'm obsessed with this. I write out a Grizzlies rotation and go to earlybirdrights.com basically every day and try to mix it up. We don't know who's going to be playing for the Grizzlies. Because Justice Winslow is such a mystery. He hasn't played since January. And to ask him to be a starter and to play starter minutes, we don't know. We don't know. Justice Winslow is a big question. And a lot of people are penciling him in as the starter and to play a bunch of minutes. Chris Harrington over the Daily Memphian, he wrote an article suggesting D'Anthony Melton should be the starter. And I'm fine with that. He thought the starter should be Morant, Melton, then Dillon Brooks at the three, with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Jonas Valanciunas. The issue for me when I play around with the lineups is then it gets clogged up. Are we going to get Josh Jackson in the game? Are we going to get Kyle Anderson in the game? Probably not all of them. Taylor Jenkins did say that he envisioned Justice Winslow not being point guard, mainly playing alongside Tyus and Ja. So I guess that is the one thing of illuminating fact that we got from this, even if we don't know if it's true or not, that Justice is probably not going to play point guard by himself. But if you start Ja, D'Anthony, and Dillon, then I feel like it gets weird. You have to sub out one of D'Anthony or Dillon pretty early, unless you're going to play Justice at the two a lot. Then it gets murky as far as shuffling those lineups. But in this audio medium, it's hard to go over all those things without losing a lot of people. So I wonder if they are going to just maybe experiment around. Maybe they do start Ja, Dillon, Justice, Jaren, Jonas, and then maybe they try it with D'Anthony and then Dillon. And then maybe they try Melton and Winslow. Like maybe they try Ja, D'Anthony, Justice, and have Dillon coming off the bench. I don't know. I think a lot of it might actually be matchup dependent. Because when we think about these things, the teams that are playing in the warm-up games or the restart games, a lot of those teams don't have very strong small forwards. The Pelicans have Brandon Ingram, obviously, who's a big guy, taller guy, but like the Trailblazers, they don't have a three. The Spurs, I mean, it's DeMar DeRozan. The Jazz don't really have, I mean, Joe Ingles, you could put anybody on him, I guess, we don't know who's even starting the three, I guess, for the Jazz, technically. You know, the Raptors have Pascal Siakam, but we don't know who's going to be playing then. So, like, maybe some games you're going to start different based on your opponent. And then if you think about the Grizzlies making the playoffs and facing the Lakers, well, then when you're playing LeBron James, if you're one of those people not like me who's like, okay, Kyle's not going to play, you're probably going to want Kyle Anderson to play some minutes then. You're probably going to want Justice Winslow and Kyle Anderson to split guarding LeBron. You want to keep the Dillon Brooks guarding LeBron to a minimum. Jaren and Brandon are going to have their hands full with Anthony Davis. Jonas Valanciunas is going to have to guard Anthony Davis a little bit and also guard Dwight Howard. So like, I guess it just depends on the matchups, and that'll be something interesting to see. If it does change up based on their opponent. I mean, I think I'm going to release these on Twitter over at Fast Break Break. I created several options. I did one where I did a 9-man rotation. So controversially, I left out Gorgui Dieng and our boy Josh Jackson. Feel free to skip to the next podcast in your podcast player if you can't handle the not playing Josh Jackson. I just, again, don't see where he fits. But again, if you want to put him in, that's fine. He could be the ninth guy over Kyle Anderson. But then I did another one following Chris's idea with D'Anthony Melton starting alongside Dillon Brooks. It's harder. It gets murkier. I don't love the second unit lineups that much. Then I did one where I got weird. I said, let's try bringing Jonas off the bench. And if Jonas comes off the bench and you start Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark, who again, notoriously, averages 1 point per game in his three career starts. If you have Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr., then I started Kyle Anderson, the small forward, brought Winslow as like a sixth man. That one made a lot of sense to me. Again, I was thinking Jonas is going to destroy these second units. But again, a problem there is Ja Morant and Jonas Valanciunas play so well together, I want to keep them together. So again, when I'm pairing these up, I'm always thinking like, I want to keep Kyle only on the court if he's a four, or if he's playing with Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr. I want to keep him far away from Jonas Valanciunas. When Jaren and Dylan are on the court, I want to make sure D'Anthony Melton is out there to grab some rebounds, or Justice Winslow is out there to grab some rebounds. I want to get as much time as I can with the units of Melton and Clark and Jackson, because they've killed all year, and I don't think that's an accident. I know a lot of it has been done against second units, but I think those three guys make things happen. And then, obviously, I think John Morant's going to play most of the minutes. So those are all the things you balance. And again, in the pandemic times, basically, this is how I entertain myself. I find this now more entertaining than actually playing video games. I just dream in my head, and I draw out these little rotations and try a bunch of different ones and then circle the ones that I like the most. It's good to have hobbies to entertain ourselves. Anyway, thanks for listening to the episode. Please share it with other Grizzlies fans. If you have comments or suggestions, hit me up at Fast Break Break on Twitter or at Grits Grinds on Twitter. Y'all have a good one. Go Grizz.
This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0 and he's... What a World Cup for Megan Rapinoe!
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair, each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.